obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
My name is Jay and I'm an alcoholic. And welcome to Rocketed, Bill W.'s Spiritual Journey, Part 1, The Spook Journal. Now, Bill Wilson was a co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was born in 1895 and he lived until 1971. There was nothing about this man that was remarkable at all from his upbringing. I mean, he had alcoholism in his family. Anybody had that? Okay. Had his family split up as a young age? Anybody have that? He grew up in a small town. Torrance, I guess, could be defined as a small town, but there was nothing remarkable about that. And yet, this man had an experience that absolutely fundamentally changed the community, the world, and the way that we treat addiction. One person. Now, most of us are familiar with the fact that Bill had this long descent into alcoholism. He had a wife, Lois, that was very supportive of him. And Bill and Lois, as his alcoholism spiraled, tried everything they could to stop drinking. They even tried religious cures. He went to some Christian Science meetings. He did absolutely anything that he could to stop drinking. And yet he was unable to. He finally reached the point where he'd gotten a medical diagnosis that what was going to happen is that he was going to either die of in alcoholic convulsions, he was going to drink his brain wet. Is anybody ever seen a wet brain? Now, wet brain is where you consume so much alcohol that your brain becomes permanently besotted and you are unable to care for yourself. It's almost like what a lobotomy does to you. It actually cuts off the higher functioning of your brain. And so Bill ends up at this drying out spot called Towns Hospital. And the doctor there tells his wife that he's either going to die of convulsions, he's going to have a wet brain. If she's really lucky and she's got enough money, she can lock him up for the rest of his life. And this is what happened to high-end alcoholics and drug addicts. That's as good as it got in 1934. And he can't figure it out. She can't figure it out. Silkworth says that what he has is that he has an illness that when he drinks, it sets off a compulsion, and he's doomed to drink against his will. And that the only therapy for people like him is not to have anything to drink at all. And Chris. And so Bill overhears this. He's got the death sentence now. He who thought so well of himself is not going to be able to cure his alcoholism. He can't solve his problem. And he's had this friend who's come by and seen him who's brought him a message about a spiritual solution to this problem. And Bill is, to say he was dismissive of religion would be putting it mildly. He said that when Ebby told him about it, you might as well have hit him with a wet mop. Anybody ever been hit with a wet mop? Not a lot of fun. Anyway, so Bill is in this state of abject despair. Now, this guy's a depressive anyway, and he's really hitting the skids now. And Ebby stops by to visit him again. Bill thinks, oh, great. He's coming by to give me the business. He's going to get the heat on me. He's going to try and give me the conversion. Ebby doesn't do any of that. He just says, how you doing? Sorry you ended up in the hospital. That's really a drag. And Bill's, Ebby's leaving, and Bill says, hey, just a second. I want you to tell me that Oxford group formula again. And so Ebby tells him. He says, you get honest with yourself. You get honest with another person. You go out and you try and make amends for whatever it is that you've done, and you pray to whatever God there might be. That's it. See you later. And he splits. So this guy, Bill Wilson, is as low as he has ever been. And this guy's a bottom feeder as far as his depression goes. And then, just out of that pain, he cries out, if there be a God, let him show himself to me. And all of a sudden it happens. He has this tremendous spiritual experience. In James's varieties of religious experience, they call it the sudden experience. He had this white light that came throughout the room. He felt as though he was completely cleaned out. He knew that his alcohol problem was lifted. And he had a sense of communion that he had never had before. Now, in the book Alcoholics Anonymous that most of us are familiar with, what happens is Bill is talking a little bit. He talks about having this vision of one drunk working with another. But if you read some of the other stuff that he wrote before the big book and after, he talks about having a revelation of the movement all the way going forward. He actually saw Alcoholics Anonymous as it was maybe even today. And it's this revelation that gave him the confidence to go on no matter what. Bill was as hard-boiled an atheist and agnostic as you could get. He was a realist. He was a materialist. He liked to see the cash value of it. He was a Wall Street stock speculator. One of the great closes that he always used is, come on down, Tony. One of the great closes he always used is that if you never know where a man really is until he puts his money down. And Bill was not a believer in any sense of the in any stretch of the imagination, but once he had this experience, he knew. And for the rest of his life, what he attempted to do was to bring that knowledge to people like himself who didn't know, who hadn't experienced it. One of the things that he gave us was this wonderful method that we call the steps. But that was really for alcoholics. He wanted to provide this knowledge to anyone and everyone. And this great desire that he had, this thing that informed and drove him for the rest of his life, I like to call it that he was trying to bring the fourth dimension, the reality of the fourth dimension, into those people that were stuck in the third, as he was. In 1955, there was Bill got a letter from the Society for Paranormal Research. paranormal means outside of the normal. And he got this letter from a woman by the name of Lucille Kahn. Lucille Kahn and her husband David were people that had set up the foundation that Edgar Cayce, who was kind of the medium in the United States, if you want to read, there's a great book called A River Flows Through It that's his story. And all these people that I'm talking about were really quite remarkable. But anyway, Lucille Kahn was very familiar with mediums and mediumistic stuff, and she was involved with this Society for Paranormal Research, which was founded by a woman by the name of Eileen Garrett. Eileen Garrett was a medium, and she's got a great book. Sounds a lot like maybe what we call Bill's Bill C's autobiography, called Many Voices. And anyway, Eileen was this incredible medium who put herself out to all kinds of investigators, and they were never able to explain how it is that this woman was able to get the information that she got. Very much the same way with Edgar Cayce. People could come and they could go through it, but they could never figure it out. And anyway, she sent Bill a letter saying, I'm really happy to invite you to speak in our lecture series in 1956 on the relationship between psychedelics and mediums' ability to ascertain truth. And she said, we need two, we'd like you to give us two examples of where you are, why you consider yourself to be a medium. And so Bill wrote her back a letter talking about two different experiences that he had. In 1941, after being homeless for a couple years, Bill and Lois get to Stepping Stones, which is this nice little, not nice little, it's a beautiful home in upstate New York. And I hope very much that you all have, if you ever get to New York, that you have the opportunity to go up and see it. The Stepping Stones Foundation is a wonderful thing, and this is a great place. It's a place where Bill and Lois lived together and where he wrote the 12 and 12 and the that he edited the second edition. So they've got this nice house, and they start having friends over. And a couple of the friends that come over regularly are Ann and DeVoe Bingham. DeVoe Bingham had the Chrysler franchise. They're in Chippewa, New York. And Ann was friends with Ann Wilson. And Ann Bingham would later become the co-founder of Al-Anon, of all things. And a guy by the name of Tom Powers, who was a recovering alcoholic, who was starting to come around. And they had a couple of friends. And what they would do is that they would get involved in what was very popular in the day called spiritualism. And they would get, anybody ever play with a Ouija board? Okay. Gin. Oh. And what they would do is that in these days, now you have to remember there's no television, very little radio, there's not a whole lot of light. And one of the things that spirit needs is it needs dark. You know, people say, well, why isn't there a lot of spiritualism nowadays? Well, there's not any quiet. And spirit needs quiet. Anyway, so they got together once a week and had this little parlor thing where they would try and communicate. And as happened in homes all over the United States, when people followed a few simple instructions, many times stuff happened. Now, one of the things is you need to believe that something's going to happen for something to come along. Kind of like going out on a date, you know. You got to believe that something's going to happen if something's going to happen, you know. Just doesn't hit you up the side of the head. So anyway, and so they're having these things, and they start getting these communications. And Ann Bingham starts writing them down in a journal, and they're going along, and they're getting all kinds of communication. I know you can't believe this, but Bill is just a little miffed because he's not getting any energy at all. It's not coming to him at all. And yet his friends, his wife, and he's the guy who's had the big experience, right? Why is it? I mean, it's obvious that whatever it is likes me best. He's not saying that, but I mean, he's 2 years. They're doing this stuff once a week. He doesn't have anything going on. And then one time he starts moving the board and it starts working. And the information starts pouring through him. And it reached the point where he couldn't shut it off. And he said at one point after 4 days, he thought he was going to have to end up in the hospital to do something about this. He could go to sleep, but when he would come conscious, he'd come conscious in the middle of a lecture of one kind or another. And he had things, he got things like communications on time and space and Einstein's theory of relativity channeled through Jack Westinghouse, the founder of Westinghouse, who died a few years ago. And Anne would write down what it was that was coming through him. So a few months later, it's Bill's turn to be the receiver again. They take turns. They had a little protocol. And so he's laying there. And one of the ways that the spirit had come is they called it table tapping. And so the Bill would get a number and he'd tap it, and then if it was like 5, you write down the letter E, and this way different communication comes out. So anyway, the rapping starting, and they start writing stuff down, and when they're done, it's all gibberish. You can't figure out what it is. And after a while, Tom Powers is, you know, everybody's taking a turn looking at it because they've had communication, but they don't understand it. And Tom Powers is looking at it and goes, oh, it's Latin. And so they're able to form the words, but the two, Anne and Tom, who both had 5 years of Latin, couldn't decipher what it was. So they go off into the night and they go, God, Bill's channeling Latin now. Wow, cool. And a couple weeks later, Dr. Richardson, who was a member of the Alcoholic Foundation, he's coming out, non-alcoholic, he's coming by the house to talk about some foundation business with Bill. Now, Bill knows that this is one of Rockefeller's best friends. He's a brilliant man, educated, got degrees in divinity. So he says to Dr. Richardson after they get done, he said, hey, Dr. Richardson, he said, I got some Latin that from a friend of mine, and he said I can't transcribe it. Would you take a look at it? And so Richardson sits down and he takes a look at it. He goes, well, Jiminy, I can see why if your friends only had 5 years of Latin that they couldn't understand this. This is a very ancient script. And he gets it done. It's not real long. And he says to Bill, he goes, where did you get this? And Bill says, well, I got it from a friend. And he says, well, Bill says, well, what is it? And he goes, well, this appears to be from St. Ignatius Loyola. It's a description of the founding of the church in Rome. Where did you get this? And since this guy was a friend of his, Bill tells him the story. And he said Dr. Richardson walked out into the night shaking his head, very impressed. Very impressed. One of the things about this whole movement is that, you know, in this day and era, I mean, we think anybody who's doing this stuff, obviously the only place that they're getting any information is the National Enquirer, right? I mean, you know, they probably believe in space critters and the like, but this, like this Society for Paranormal Research, which was founded by Eileen Garrett, the co-founder was a woman by the name of Frances Bolton. Frances Bolton was a congressperson from Ohio, first female congressperson from Ohio. She was also her best friend in the Congress while she was, the 8 terms that she served in Congress was Gerald Ford. And she and her family were one of the major bankrollers and supporters, people that really pushed Dwight Eisenhower to run for the presidency of the United States. So these are not just, you know, a bunch of ethereal folks running around. I mean, these are practical people that are trying to push the envelope, trying to figure out what else there is aside from what it is that we see. Has anybody here ever seen What the Bleep Do We Know? Yeah, okay, well, a few. But, you know, one of the things that as we go along in our scientific understanding is that, say, this bottle supposedly is solid, right? But if you look at it, you know, with a big microscope and get on, it's a bunch of mass whirling around. And that the actual mass is a very, very small part of that bottle. That no matter how far down they get, there's always more space around it. And so our senses, our 5 senses, are like so limiting to what actually it is that's going around. Anyway, so these people are looking for ways of going beyond what is seen. They're not just relying upon what it is that appears to be. And I don't know about you, but I know that what I see and what my friend Jack sees are entirely different things, especially when it comes to alcoholics. Another time, Lucille and Bill Wilson are talking, and Lucille's talking about the fact that, and again, this is 1955. So when I talk about psychic phenomena, when I talk about psychedelics, you have to understand that what I'm talking about was, at the time, considered medicine. It was not considered a recreational drug, nor was any of the people that were involved with it in the mid-50s, you know, trying to decide what it was, you know, how well this would work with, you know, electric guitars and the like. It was not the deal. So this is medicine. This is medicine. Lucille writes to Bill, and she says, on a recent trip to Montreal, I read Aldous Huxley's latest essay on expanded consciousness. It's not on drugs. You read The Doors of Perception, you read The Heaven and Hell, it's about expanded consciousness. Not about drugs. Well, but it's about expanded consciousness. She said, I realize anew that this subject, due to mescaline, is occupying more and more the reflection of serious thinkers. This is philosophers. This is clergymen. This is all kinds of folks. I feel that it has been placed in a category that people are beginning to believe in an illuminated moment without leading a monastic life. An illuminated moment, a moment of awareness, a moment of revelation. This is what these people are trying to provide for others. So the second mediumistic experience that Bill talks about it is in 1949, he goes out to Nantucket. And a lot of the stuff that I talk about is not only in the research that I've done, but it is in AA-approved literature. If you actually read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, if you actually read Pass It On, this particular story is almost all in Pass It On, and it's a wonderful thing. where Bill gets up one morning, he's visiting, and he's having some coffee, makes some coffee, trying to be quiet, and is in his friend's kitchen, and an apparition shows up. And he says, I'm wondering why it is that people aren't responding to me. And Bill says, well, do you realize you're dead? And the guy didn't know. He said, I'd like to go get a drink. I want to go and can you help me get a drink? I want to go and get a boat. And Bill said, no. He said, the reason that people aren't paying attention to you is that you're on the other side of the veil. And the guy finally goes, oh, okay, and kind of goes off. And then Bill's having another cup of coffee, and another guy shows up, and he says, nice work. We've been trying to get through to this guy that he's dead for a while, but he hasn't been paying attention because he's still thinking that he's part of the material world. He said, would you like to meet anybody else while you're here? Bill says, sure, bring him by. So like there were three or four different Bill refers to them, and in the spiritualist language, they didn't call them ghosts. They called them disincarnates, those who are not material. And so they show up, and they have some conversations, and then they leave. And then Bill's host and the rest of the family gets up, and they start talking, and Bill tells them just for fun about what happened. And none of these people had any knowledge about the fact that Bill had these mediumistic proclivities, that he was interested in spiritualism or any of that stuff, because he didn't talk about it with folks that were not like-minded, that weren't, you know, going to honor what it is that he was doing. And anyway, so he tells the story, and everybody gets nervous. They just want him, just shut up, Bill. Just shut up. Get away. And so the next day, they go out on a picnic. They go downtown, and Bill had been very clear. He told the names of the different folks, and there's like Quigley and Pettingill and Monroe, and Monroe had been the guy who'd kind of been there, Bill's real point of contact. And there's a war memorial down in the center of town, and Bill and Lois happened to look at it. And there is this guy, Monroe, who died just exactly as he told Bill that he died. Now, Bill had not had any education on, you know, New England fighting guys, naval heroes and the like. And he tells his host, and his host recognized that he was right. Then they go into the Whaling Museum, and there's a logbook with all the different people that had been coming in and out in the ships and the like. There are the names of three of the people. Now he says, you know, now why would I make this up? You know, but he's a sensitive. And I know that there are sensitives in this room.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Bill actually believed that he would be remembered, that he could make a more serious contribution to the world than Alcoholics Anonymous. And in the movie, you saw how he kept saying that when I get done with AA, when I get done with AA, when I get done with AA. From 1955 on, he wants to get down to what he really wants to do. And over in letters to people, he talks about the three things that he wants to do. First, he wants to bring Alcoholics Anonymous's experience to what he calls general neurosis. That he wants to bring the fruit of the steps and the methodology to medicine in general. The second thing he wants to do is that he wants to study psychic phenomena. Get down with folks and really study what this stuff is and how it goes. And the third thing that he wants to do is prove survival. And by survival, what he referred to was that the soul continues on after the body's dropped, and that the personality goes on from one point all the way forward. I'll have to... He wrote a letter to a friend by the name of Ab, and he's talking again about this psychic stuff and the like. He says, I know that this subject is suspect, or to talk about it to some is just ridiculous. Like most scoffers at prayer, practically always the people that are scoffing are ones that have never tried psychic investigation. The doubters in the field of psychics are mainly those who've never really investigated themselves, let alone had their own experience. And so he keeps looking for different ways to pass this message on, this thing on. There are four books. One of the things that Bill says is, I know that with this group, you probably all have different folks that you sponsor. And one of the things that they'll go and have a conversion experience with some group or some, they'll get exposed to some new meditation practice, and they'll come running to you and they'll go, my God, Bill had to be a Muslim. Because I've been reading the Holy Quran, man, and it is 12 steps are all through here. And yeah, they are, you know. Or they have some conversion experience in some other group. They'll you know, have you had anybody say, well, obviously Bill was Buddhist. You know, I mean, these truths are eternal. And one of the things that Bill had, he had a lot of friends that were professional God people. And one of the difficulties that he got in was when he started telling these people the truth about what was going on, some of them got very nervous. Others of them got very interested. Sam Shoemaker, one of the things that Bill wanted to do with this psychic experience stuff is to try and prove it. Again, what he wants to do is he wants proof that the spirit world is real for people. He got together with Dr. Oppenheimer, who was one of the fathers of the nuclear age, one of the atomic physicists, right? And they're working on a machine to calibrate it so they can figure out what's moving in the room. And I don't think they ever actually got it funded, but Dr. Henry Osmond, who worked at the Weyburn Hospital in Saskatchewan, who was a very big friend of Bill's, who I'll talk about in a different talk later, he and his associates were constructing a machine trying to do exactly the same thing. I mean, this is scientific research. Another interesting experience that Bill left in one of his letters, he had a cousin who was a contractor. And the contractor is helping build this top secret laboratory. It's got like walls of steel. It's got, you know, concrete walls after the steel. Got time locks on the door. They got the calibration equipment in there. And it's set. And every morning when they come in, it's been messed with. And they can't figure out what it is. They call in the FBI. The FBI investigates. They say, nobody can get in here. You guys are crazy. So they start setting cameras up. And the cameras catch a spirit. And the spirit that they caught looked a lot like Thomas Edison. I'm sorry? Oh, it was Thomas Edison was the spirit. There were four books. Bill talks in his letters about how he's not a reader. I'm sorry, I got sidetracked. That he's not a reader. And there are only four books that he mentions again and again and again. One is The Varieties of Religious Experience by William James. The second is Aldous Huxley's Heaven and Hell. The third is Bucky, and it's spelled B-U-C-K-E's Cosmic Consciousness. And the fourth book is by Raynor, R-A-Y-N-O-R Johnson, and it's called Imprisoned Splendor. So if you want to do a little recreational reading. Now, Bill's not the only one who's doing this stuff. Dr. Bob is also on this same path. These boys are both rolling together. Bill actually sends Bob a Ouija board and says, start having some fun with it, and he does. There was a man by the name of Roland Jay who was a sober guy in Akron, and he was a spiritual force. And Roland was known to be able to take small brooks and make them change their course during the fall. During the fall, after the leaves had fallen, he could make trees bloom. And there's a great story about Ann and Bob, and LG tells this story. This is in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timer, and they're sitting around one day and. Roland grows a beard on Dr. Bob's face, and everybody, including Bob, can see it. And Bob thought that was one of the funniest things he'd ever seen. Bob was a reader. Bob did a lot of stuff, and they kept they would go over to Roland's on Sunday, and Roland would call in the spirits, and it started to get a little spooky for some of the folks. And the AAs there, I know you can't believe this, but the people there in Akron were not real interested about what was going on. And they started putting on the heat on Bob to stop it, and after a while he finally did. One of the members in that area, her name was Virginia, she had a daughter who was very, very ill. And Roland had been known to heal children. And so... she asked Bob, well, what should I do? And Bob said, well, you know, pray about it and think whatever, you know. And she thought, well, heck, I can always take the kid to be operated on. And so we'll give it a try. And she goes by and she comes to the house, and Bob and Roland are there at the house. And Roland says to her, well, are you a believer? Do you believe in spirits? Do you believe in spiritual healing? And she goes, well, no, I really don't. And he said, great. That's wonderful. Go to the movies. And so she goes off to the movies, comes back a couple hours later, and her child, who is very, very seriously compromised, was well and never got sick again. So, I mean, there's all this stuff going on, just like there is right now. One of the things that Bob said, just for those of you who, you know, it's so interesting that we come into Alcoholics Anonymous and we hear about a spiritual solution, and then we don't want to.
I don't want to do anything about that, or, you know, I'm not interested in going that way.
And you have to remember that Bob says when he was approached by the Oxford group, that he was not very impressed by that at all. Bill felt like he'd been hit with a wet mop. Why should we be any different? And why should we be any different? Anyway, I seem to have knocked that thing out. I'm sorry, because I've got these letters written out, and I don't know what it is, Danny. What do you do when the when the power goes down, right? You just play to the front row. So I'll talk for about another 10 minutes, and then I'll be really happy to take questions about any of this stuff that I've been talking about. One of our another great book, if you wanna investigate some of this stuff, is Mel Barger's book, My Search for Bill W. It's a wonderful piece. But I want to do. So Dr. Bob says this is about faith and hope, and he says, I think they can be acquired. Yeah, that's right. But they do that all the time. Here's a fun one. This is a little something about Dr. Bob. There was a man by the name of Frank Amos. Frank Amos was a good friend of John D. Rockefeller's. He was the guy that went out to Akron to investigate what AA was for the Rockefellers. Kind of a real straight arrow guy, kind of like he was like Rockefeller's right hand guy, and anyway, after a time, and he's on the Alcoholic Foundation, he does everything that he possibly can to help AA, has a nice career, he retires down in Pompano Beach, Florida, and while he's down there, he gets hooked up with some of Bill's friends, who are involved in a spiritualist church. They had a little celebration for Dr. Bob on the first anniversary of Bob's death. And Frank writes a letter to Bill talking to him about the fact that Bob and Ann are showing up regularly in Florida. And they've been dead for a while. This is in 1960. Bill writes back to Frank and he says that now that I'm going to retire from AA, Lois and I hope to take a deeper interest in the psychic world. Now and then we go down to Stamford with Ann and DeVoe. Dr. Bob also turns up there regularly. And I'm very glad that he's showing up for you. So, I mean, this is not just coming from, oh, well, Bill's just a little weird. No, I mean, these people had open minds. They were trying stuff. And the question is what are we trying? Now, I'm not saying that you ought to go, you know, get your Ouija board and all that stuff, but are you opening your mind? Are you opening your heart? Or are we just stuck? This is what it is. And so I want to do a little thing here about Bill wrote a letter to Mel Barger that was really wonderful, and Mel was kind enough to give me the permission to share a bit of this with you. Bill talked about his white light experience as the flash of reality, that was the point at which he really knew reality. He said, I often feel to make a point that every AA in the program gets the exact same thing that I got. The exact same thing. The only difference that I can see is that most of these educational variety experiences, aside from the sudden flash that he had, come over time. therefore I can't hold, this permits a huge inrush of grace that brings a vision. In most cases, grace leaks in little by little. Therefore, I can't hold with most theologians that these sudden experiences are something special and unique. And then he says that if you were to take the sum of your own transformations and experiences that you've had in Alcoholics Anonymous and condense them into 6 minutes, you'd see stars too. And wouldn't you? He says, my original experience was positive on the whole. And since then, I have been subject to an immense amount of psychic phenomenon of all sorts, so much so that immortality is no longer a question of faith. To me, it's a matter of knowledge and of evidence. He says, we just need to try and be open-minded. He says, in any case, I do not think it imperative that my theological views nor those of Dr. Bob ever have any appreciable influence on AA. That would only create another competing religion. With me, the original experience was so prodigious that the preview of destiny so intense that I've never had any difficulty with doubt since that time, even at my worst. And that has often been damn bad. The sense of the presence of God has never deserted me, and that has pulled me through some awful jams. My doubts have been about myself as a going concern. Never has there been any question about the ultimate destiny of us all or of God's justice and love. He goes on to talk about his own investigating, and he says, by contrast, my own reading has been very sparse. I still have rather relied on observation and conversation. I guess that's why I'm still a shopper at the theological pie counter. And back in the day, what they do is they'd set the pie out, and you'd go and select them, you know. And I'm sorry for the fact that I wasn't prepared to lecture in this fashion. I'm sorry, but I'll leave you with one thing, and then we can. I'll be happy to entertain some questions and maybe inflict some other things upon you. There was a Bill had a cousin, a non-alcoholic cousin, reach out to him, a woman by the name of Jean Kalkoff, and Jean had a wonderful correspondence for about 10 years. About Gene had no spiritual training or any of that kind of stuff. And so, you know, he did what he could to encourage her and talk about the AA experience. But I'd like to leave you with this. He says, actually, I think it's just as logical to say that about God as you understand him, that God was first on the scene, about whether there is a God or whether there isn't. And all the aspects of the cosmos are aspects of him, with a capital H. Within this frame of reference, you can have all of the evolution you wish. For me, I'd rather believe that something is a fraction of everything, rather than insist, as the determinists do, that something grew out of nothing, or at least grew out of dust. Where the dust came from, they do not say. Well, it's a lot of fun trying to figure it all out. That is, if you don't take yourself too seriously. Okay. So that is just a little smattering. My friend Kim is here, and Kim has been very kind to transcribe some of this stuff for me, and God bless you, and thank you very, very much for your help. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.